Support for the Splendid Table podcast provided by the Muir Glen Organic Soup Collection. Gourmet recipe soups made from premium garden fresh ingredients. Online at muirglen.com.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper, and you're listening to The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. Our program is produced by American Public Media and brought to you by Super Target. Today, it's a show given over to one of America's great unsung food towns. We're taking you to Honolulu and its island of Oahu for the food and the culture few tourists get into. Let's start where things began for us with award-winning chef Alan Wong. Alan is Hawaiian restaurant nobility. Locals go to Alan Wong's restaurant for brilliant riffs on island dishes that everybody grew up with. There's lots of inside jokes on his plates, but even if you don't get the punchline, you eat like nowhere else in the world. Behind his playfulness is a deep sense of heritage. He's been digging into the origins of Hawaii's foods. And with the layers of ethnicity on this island, he felt doing some historical research would help him better communicate with his staff about where his food comes from. I mean, how does one go about explaining a palate? Alan says, look at the past.
We took the crew down to a place in Waipahu. It's next to a sugar mill.
Uh-huh.
Waipahu would be in between here, Honolulu,
yes,
and the North Shore.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a Hawaii Plantation Village. So you get there, and you cannot go on your own. You get guided by a tour, a volunteer or a docent. And you actually walk into a Chinese home as it existed in plantation days. There's an actual Chinese kitchen that existed in back in the day, in the plantation day. Then you would go through like an Okinawan house, a Japanese house. You would see the Japanese ofuro, or the bath. You see the Japanese tofu, what they call the tofuya, where they made the tofu. And then they bartered and traded with the Portuguese for the bread and the Chinese for this or what have you. And basically what it does, it tells a story about what happened in Hawaii with the immigrants. You know, there were three very important migrations of people that came to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine nobody on the island. And then the first Polynesians came by boat from the South Pacific. So there was very little indigenous to the island. They brought a lot of things with them.
Mm-hmm.
The taro, the breadfruit, and the chickens, and the dogs, and the pigs came by way from the South Pacific by canoe. So that's the first migration. The second is the missionaries. Now, they came by boat, too.
Right.
Some were whalers. Some of the first ones were Portuguese. They would stay here during the winter. They brought chilies. They brought bacalao, the salted cod. They brought the salted salmon. So you go to a luau, you have lomi lomi salmon with the salt salmon.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have salmon on this island.
Well, I haven't seen a salmon going upstream here any time I've ever been
but
here.
But just the idea of salted fish.
Yes, yes.
The chilies, you know, were on board because they have high vitamin C to prevent scurvy.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see in our restaurants the chili pepper water condiment, that's where that came from. Today, almost every household has a bottle of chili pepper water in the refrigerator. That's like their Tabasco.
I see.
So the missionaries also, you know, they brought the sugar and the pineapple. The sugar came before the pineapple. So the sugarcane plantation was born. All their workers were Hawaiian. When the boats came, what they also brought, they brought the cockroach, they brought the insects, and they brought the rats. They also brought disease. And the Hawaiian immune system was not, they couldn't handle that, and it's a true story. Over 50% of the population of the Hawaiians died. So who's working the sugarcane fields? So they went to Asia to go look for the first immigrants to come to work the sugarcane plantation. The first place they went was China. They were men, as opposed to families.
Mm-hmm.
They came, they made like $9 a month. They came for a better life.
This would have been when?
1800s? Oh, this was the 1800s.
Mid-1800s, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. And then the Portuguese came. The difference was the Portuguese brought their families.
So they came to stay.
Mm-hmm. So you have to imagine that scenario. What happens when this Chinese man marries a Hawaiian girl? Okay, and the Chinese man is hungry for Chinese food, but this Hawaiian girl don't know how to cook Chinese food.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's going to try, he's got to teach her. But already back then, you know, my style of cooking happened way back then. You know, I don't take credit for that.
Uh-huh.
Because this girl is going to try her best to, like, cook something Chinese, but it's Hawaiian or with Hawaiian ingredients, right?
Right.
There are a lot of people in Hawaii that might have 6, 7, 8 different nationalities.
I come to your restaurant as a cook. do you tell me all this, essentially, or you try to essentially instill this in me as I'm making the food you want me to make?
I tell you this so that you have a point of reference. I tell each cook that comes from the mainland America, your first year is learning about the ingredients. These local kids, they grew up with miso, wasabi, ginger, sesame oil, soy sauce. They know you got like dozens and dozens of different kinds of soy sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I think no different from any other country or culture. You understand the people, you understand the culture and the ingredients. And then like my, you know, my chef, Andre Sultan, would say, then you start cooking with 2 feet on the ground. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And you started out working at the Greenbrier in West Virginia, and then Andre Sultner, one of the great classical French chefs anywhere in the United States, but in New York. It's kind of an interesting circle, isn't it?
I've had a good time. Interesting time.
Alan, thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Enjoy the rest of the time in Hawaii.
We will.
Alan Wong is chef owner of Alan Wong's Restaurant and the Pineapple Room, both in Honolulu. Now, you can find Alan's recipe for Hamakua Springs tomato, beet, and avocado salad with Lihing Moy vinaigrette on the website, splendidtable.org. Local food is burgeoning all over the islands, from the Big Island to Kauai. Farmers markets are thriving, but it's a recent thing, and it was started when farmers began linking up with chefs like Roy Yamaguchi of Roy's restaurant chain. For Honolulu's top eateries, only local salad greens will do, specifically Nalo Farm greens. You see them everywhere. Now, they're grown right across the island of Oahu from Honolulu by Dean Okimoto. Nalo Farm is the little farm that could. Only 3 acres in a misty valley of an ancient volcano. Late one afternoon, Dean Okimoto walked me through patches of all kinds of salads, picking leaves here and there to taste.
So when did you start this?
We started growing greens in 1990 for Roy's. You know, we were just growing herbs at that time. So Roy goes, we'll take all the herbs from you. Well, I was ready to quit farming, because we were struggling. But he said, I want you guys to look at growing other things. And he said, look at lettuces and greens and things like that. And I kind of knew that, you know, the climate here it's hot. Mm-hmm. So when you grow lettuces, even lettuces are really, during the summers, it's actually really bitter. It's more similar to mesclun that's in Europe.
Yeah.
And when we took it out, he said, this is more like European greens than California greens.
Hmm.
So that's how we went out and sold it. And then when we really started looking at it, when Costco started taking the Earthbound and bringing it all
yes,
in.
Yeah.
You know, I always try everything, you know. Mm-hmm. So I took the container one day, and my daughter was about 8 years old at the time. And she saw the container. She needed it.
The plastic container.
Yeah, she needed it for something else.
Uh-huh.
So she dumped out the greens. And I just happened to have a basket of greens right next to it. And I was looking at the amount of the greens of that container. So I put a pound together, same weight. And the bulk of our greens actually turned out to be almost a third more. In other words,
oh,
if they buy a pound of our greens and they buy a pound of the mainland greens, if you're able to plate 6 plates of the mainland greens,
right,
you're gonna be able to plate 8 plates of ours.
So for a restaurant or anybody,
right,
that's money in the bank almost.
Right. You know, I'm not saying California greens are bad, but they're to me they match different types of food.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know,
well, there's such high flavors in the food
right
here. Also, Dean, it sounds like you're a farmer who eats.
Oh yes, you can tell.
But it also sounds like you have long-standing relationships with the leaders in many of the restaurants here
yes
in the islands. And is that typical of a lot of the farmers here?
No, I wish it was more. When I travel, I'm eating next week at Michael Mina's and Ron Siegel's when I go to San Francisco next
uh-huh
week. So, you know, yeah, I love to eat. And I love to go to those places because they're the movers and shakers up there. And if they let me take a menu, and they usually do,
mm-hmm,
I usually look at what's on there and I always find something that's new.
And then you'll attempt to do it here?
Yeah.
Dean, I have heard that you are sprouting corn.
Yeah, we do corn sprouts and pea sprouts.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have any now?
Yeah, we'll show you how we grow it and everything.
Okay.
Now, the field, well, we're really nestled here. It's almost as though we're cosseted inside very, very high mountains, very tall mountains. We're really inside of an old volcano. You can see the ribs coming down the side of these, it looks like moss-colored slopes. And what's in front of me is the main acreage of the farm, and it almost looks like just a wide, beautiful sweep of hallway. And to the left, palm trees. And there are rows of greens in front of us, but it looks like a striped carpet of every color of green you've ever imagined. This is a corrugated metal, looks like a Quonset hat with a big aluminum door.
Yep.
And this is where the corn sprouts happen.
This is where we have the corn sprouts.
And it's dark.
Yes.
Oh!
So that's the pea sprouts that we
have. It's like being hit by spring. These tall, almost white sprouts with tiny pea leaves on the top.
We shade it so that it grows taller.
Yeah.
And then it stays a little bit softer that way.
Gotta taste this. Oh.
This should be really sweet.
That is really sweet.
Yeah.
Oh.
So let me, this light doesn't work in here. It's completely dark.
Oh, so now we're going into a room within the building, which is absolutely pitch black.
Yeah. So
And it smells like fresh corn stalks.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, but this really smells like you've just shucked 10 dozen years of corn, and that's the corn.
Yeah, let's take it out of here.
Oh, they're beautiful. They're yellow. They look like yellow flames on top of bright yellow stalks.
Let me go get a knife, so.
Okay. These are spectacular.
So now you have this corn sprouts, and you see that they're bright yellow.
Yes.
If this stays in any kind of light, whether it be fluorescent light or sunlight or whatever, it'll start turning green in a matter of about 2 hours.
Ah. Think of the sweetest corn you've ever put in your mouth. This stalk is sweeter than that corn.
I'll tell you the secret, too. The corn seeds that we use,
yes,
it's Orville Redenbacher's popcorn.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know what's going to be happening now in basements across America?
Yeah. Yeah.
And people are going to start growing their own corn
stalks. Maybe they
should
pay me for giving them that.
I think you, yeah. So this goes into the salad mix, or are you selling this separately?
We sell it separately, yeah.
Separately.
Yeah.
And how are people using it? Just eating it?
Mostly for garnish. When we sell this, what we do is we'll put it in plastic bags,
uh-huh,
and we'll wrap it in paper. So that no sunlight hits
Yes,
it.
You can't allow sunlight
right.
to hit. But couldn't you see making this the center of the plate and building around it as opposed to using it as garnish? It's
yeah.
so intense, and it's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I'm just thinking of that with a butter sauce of some kind, with a little bit of lime or ponzu in it. What a great idea this is.
You better watch out. I think some of the chefs are going to take your idea.
Dean, thank you so much for having us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming.
Dean Okimoto is owner of Nalo Farm and president of the Hawaii Farm Bureau Federation. Well, coming up, the Holy Grail of Tuna, an insider's tour of Honolulu's Chinatown, and shave ice, surfers, and shrimp scampi on the North Shore. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is The Splendid Table, the show about life's appetites. The Splendid Table is brought to you by Super Target, one-stop shopping for groceries, cookware, and entertaining. You can visit them online at target.com/supertarget. Well, what beef is to Texas, fish is to Hawaii. Ubiquitous and delicious. Look, I know it's logical. I mean, we're talking islands. But there's something important behind all that fish. Honolulu is Pacific Seafood Central. It's home to one of America's three prime fish auctions. Now, if you want to know what's behind your mahi-mahi dinner, come here at dawn. The auction building is right on the dock, complete with fishing boats sending in their catch on ice pallets. Brooks Takanaka of the United Fishing Agency, which runs the auction, leads me into the fish room. It's filled with whole fish of all sizes. Round pink and yellow iridescent moonfish are the size of a 1950s coffee table. Gleaming tuna, that mahi-mahi, onaga, shiny swordfish. And there's no fish odor, only the smell of the sea. A clutch of bidders surround a single auctioneer as he moves from fish to fish.
Brooks, right now we're in a large room, and on rubber pallets covered with ice are what look like small tuna. They're silver, oval, and there's wedges cut out of the tails. Those wedges are displayed on top of the fish. Now, what is that about?
All right. You probably noticed that we're selling fish individually. And the reason we do that is because the quality and value of each fish differs significantly. So we may have a range of, say, so far this morning I've seen fish at about $1.50, $1.50, $2.
But
there's
a pound?
But there's also been fish going off at about $7, $8 a pound. So there is a significant difference in terms of quality, shelf life, and those characteristics.
So that way they handle that cut from the tail to see the quality?
Exactly. And the other thing then is that these people have the experience of knowing from the tail cut what the rest of the fish is going to look like.
All right. There are groups of men and women gathered around someone who seems to be the auctioneer moving down the line of fish. Who is actually buying the fish?
We have primarily wholesalers here. And a few retailers. And then this being Hawaii, we really don't prevent anybody from coming in to buy. You know, people here tend to have large parties, family parties, and so they come here to buy their fish. But for the most part, these are wholesalers.
So chefs generally don't come in to buy their own fish?
Not so much, you know, but that being said, someone like Marlboro, like Alan Wong, like DK Kodama, these people do come into the auction to basically see what the trends are, what's happening, what the prices are doing, you know, what the quality factors are, and that sort of thing. And one of the things that they've discovered is that, you know, we see more fish than the fishermen. And so our appreciation of quality is significantly different than most.
This $8 a pound tuna, this very high quality tuna, does that tuna generally stay here on the islands in Hawaii? Or is this a place that is a central shipping area for much of the Pacific?
It's pretty much a central shipping area. We're very fortunate to be sort of at the crossroads of the oceanic currents. As a matter of fact, the last few couple of weeks of the year, the currents run by the islands, and so we get a lot of good fish coming into the islands at that time of the year, and the demand factor is incredible. The last 2 weeks of the year, we were doing over 100,000 pounds of fish a day.
A day?
Yes. And today is like this week is a slow week, so we've got only about 30,000 pounds of tunas and various other bycatch species.
These boats are fishing all over the Pacific, right?
Yes, they are. This is one of the most regulated fisheries in the nation and probably in the world.
So do they radio in and say, we're now coming in?
Yes.
And you know they're arriving and you have an idea of what is coming in.
Yes.
We're bringing in tuna, we're bringing in...
Or swordfish as well, yes.
I see.
So when the vessels come into port, first into port, first up on the floor. So this morning we've had the Captain Greg with about 12,000 pounds of fish, the Hoku with 7, Captain Silver with 9.
And this is listed up on a chalkboard on the side of the wall.
So the buyers know what we've got for the day and how much fish we've got. And some of these people are actually moving fish to the mainland, to Canada as well. I would say that for the most part, most of the fish stay here in the islands, but there are those companies that do export some of these fish. Mm-hmm. Now, later on this morning, we're going to conduct an auction with the swordfish across this nation. So there are people calling in from New York, Boston, Chicago, LA, San Francisco, that are actually actively bidding on this floor with representatives here. And as they buy them, then we will pack that up and then get that to the airport.
And off it goes. You said something about having been born and bred in the
fishing industry. My grandfather was a longline fisherman.
Oh, really?
Yes, from Japan. And he came to Hawaii. And I used to go around with him whenever he came home, go to the market, go to the boat, that sort of thing. And that was a significant part of my life, you know, as a kid. And so as I grew up, I raised fish and I loved fishing and did some diving and fishing and all that myself. But because it was such a hard life, my grandfather and grandmother preferred that I didn't go into fishing.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I went into marine biology, and I've also worked with the Sea Grant program and gotten into education and outreach. And then the private sector made me an offer I couldn't refuse. It gave me an opportunity to come back to the very business that I grew up in, and it's given me an opportunity to do more for the industry and the fisheries here in Hawaii by developing this nonprofit and the educational programs that we are.
Brooks, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Brooks Takanaka is Assistant General Manager of the United Fishing Agency. In the middle of Honolulu is a thriving piece of Asian Hawaiian life that visitors often miss. Now, if you want to know the islands, make a trip. It's Chinatown, and it's chock-a-block with marketplaces that feel like you're in another country. The buildings are low-slung, no more than two stories. There are little hidden food courts and dozens of chances to snack on foods we never see. Hawaiian food authority and local foods advocate Joan Namkoon gave us a tour. This is Joan's home territory.
So what would you want us to see, or let's say not miss, here in Chinatown?
Well, Chinatown is a mix, and it always has been. It started in the 1870s, and the Chinese were among the first immigrants to Hawaii to work on the sugar plantations. Once their contracts with the sugar plantations were over, they settled in this area. They established laundries and tailor shops and grocery stores and jewelry stores, what you would find in any kind of little city.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had the Japanese, the Filipinos, the Koreans, the Chinese, the Puerto Ricans, the Portuguese. They all came to the islands to settle here, and it was because of a food. It was because of sugar that we have this multicultural, diverse community in Hawaii.
You would never think one particular food would generate all of this.
Well, I think the beauty of Chinatown for somebody who loves food is to see the food here. So, you know, we could start down here on Mauna Kea Street and we'll see what we can find food-wise.
Dynamite. Let's do it.
Actually, you know, another interesting thing, if you look at the sidewalks here.
Yeah?
The sidewalks are stone, and they were shipped here as ballast on the trading ships during the sandalwood era.
Really? So this would have been when?
Oh, this is in the late 1800s when sandalwood was really, the trade was tremendous. I mean, they came and cut all the sandalwood trees here in Hawaii and wiped them out, basically. And they went back to China. So when the ships came over empty, they would put these stones in there as ballast. And they saved them all these years. And then several years ago, they repaved the sidewalks with those stones.
That's really amazing.
Yeah. This is Nam Phong, and usually about this time of day, there's a line here that forms to buy their roast ducks, their chickens, their roast pork, the char siu. I mean, they do a wonderful job, and it's really good.
We're looking into the window, and there are small chickens. They're probably about 2 pounds, and they're shiny. It's as though someone has slicked them with sort of red gold lacquer.
Uh-huh.
And behind them are loins of pork that have the crackling on them, and it almost looks like the crackling is blistered from
yes.
the roasting. And then the char siu, am I right to say the char siu are the strips
yes.
of the pork
yes.
that
the
are
Chinese,
red tinted?
Mm-hmm. The Chinese barbecued pork.
Right. And then up here, hanging in two rows, they're so neat and tidy, are all the roast ducks. And are these butterfly ducks? They're opened up?
Those are called the pipa ducks, and they represent a Chinese musical instrument. And so they're flattened and roasted.
This place looks like it has not changed for 50, 60 years,
maybe? It's been here a while.
What is this, Joan?
Okay, we're standing in front of Sheng Cheng Yuan, which is the Chinese bakery. And what they do is all the sweet things or the confections in Chinese culture. So, especially during Chinese New Year, everybody comes in to get an assortment of all these candied fruits and vegetables. And then there's cracked seed here, there's wedding cakes, and during the Mooncakes Festival, they've got mooncakes.
And they're right next door to the duck store.
They are,
but
right here.
Again, looking in the window, candied ginger, candied squash, candied water chestnut.
Yes.
Chunks of fresh coconut that have been candied. Mm-hmm. Can we go inside?
Absolutely. Hi, Judy. How are you? You know, and they've got things like the jindui, the deep-fried mochi rice balls, sweet rice balls with, filled with coconut or black sugar. They've got steamed rice cakes. They've got the wrapped rice cakes, the jung, that are filled with pork and eggs and so on.
And these are wrapped in leaves and tied with thread or string.
Yes, yes,
and sitting, steamed. And steamed, and then would you reheat them before you? Would
Not
you steam?
Necessarily.
You
Not,
just eat them
just
as
eat
is?
Them as is.
We have to taste something.
Yeah. Yeah. Just maybe a little bit of everything. Yeah. Just a couple of pieces.
This squash.
The things that are very new to us, I think, are things like the candied squash and the water chestnuts, even the candied coconut, because
that's something they like the red and the white.
Of course, red is celebration.
Red and white. Yeah.
Red is always good luck.
Yeah.
It is good luck.
Red and white.
They're all crystallized in sugar, cooked in sugar, and then they eat them with tea. And they usually present it in a multi-section box. And and each one has a meaning during Chinese New Year. What are all the different meanings, Judy?
I forget all lotus the meanings now.
Yeah, lotus Chinese, seed is for many children.
Chinese always sweet, like birthday, marry. All sweet, good, not bitter, sweet.
Like. So the sweetness is a symbol of celebration of goodness and sweetness of life.
Thank you.
Yes. I think that's going to be an education for us. It's a good start.
418.
There you are.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You've known these people all your life, haven't you?
You know, I've been in here so many times with film crews or whatever, and so like she kind of knows me now. So there's a lei stand there. There's one up here that's quite famous, Cindy's Lei Shop. And then there's, you know, fabric stores and herbalists down here, and you can come in and get your remedies for whatever ails you.
So Joan, what's the next stop now?
Well, we're heading down Mauna Kea Street, and we're going to take a right turn onto King Street and go to Oahu Market. And Oahu Market is about, 100 years old. It started out in competition with another market down the street.
Uh-huh.
And but they won out here because all the immigrants came here to shop because the fish was fresher. So,
quality wills out.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, the Oahu Market looks like a miniature, it's a Chinese building.
It
looks like we're in China.
Right.
With the layered roofs and then the bright red awning.
Right. And there's probably 30 or 40 little different vendors in there selling different things.
Oh, the fish looks wonderful, Joan.
Yes, fresh fish. Right now we're looking at snapper, we're looking at some bass, we're looking at aku and ahi and onagas. I mean, it's all here.
But the thing that's so interesting is, to me, all the heads are on.
Yes.
It's an entire animal.
Yes.
And those eyes are as clear, which is the fresh.
Fresh.
Yeah, you know right away.
Yes, yes. And you know, here in the islands, I guess we're so used to seeing fish with the head on and tail. I mean, we serve our fish that way, especially if we're doing it Chinese style.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a whole fish. And there are some people who prize the heads. They want to kind of chew on the eyeballs and go through all parts of the head. I mean, that's what they're after.
I would imagine selling to this clientele is not easy if you have anything that's a little bit off or anything that's not quite top quality.
Yes, you've got to have fresh stuff. We're just going to go right down here. We're heading to the Look Fun factory, the rice noodle factory.
We're walking into what really, it's a factory, it's an old...
It is a factory. Mm-hmm.
And there are people in the back with big half sheet pants, and they're folding up. It almost looks like they're folding towels, but that's the rice noodle sheets?
That's the rice noodle sheets. They oil the sheet pans and pour in the batter. It's a rice flour and water batter, and then it's Some of it is sprinkled with Chinese pork, some of it with shrimp, and then they steam them. And the plain ones are used for making chow fun noodles, stir-fried chow fun noodles.
Right, which are the thick, the wide noodles.
The wide noodles. And then, you know, some of them are eaten just drizzled with soy sauce.
But now we're going to get a sample.
And one shrimp. Can you cut it up for me, please? They're 95 cents a roll.
Thank you.
And he's going to cut it up for us, and we can go outside and eat it. Drizzle it with some soy sauce.
There are two different flavors. One roll is less in it.
One roll has shrimp, and the other one has char siu, which is the Chinese roast pork.
Okay. I'm going to start with this one. I'm not sure. It's the texture of silk. I mean, it bounces.
Really soft, really fresh.
So subtle. Delicious. Joan? Perfect way to end the Chinatown visit. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was so good. Joan Namkoon is author of Food Lover's Guide to Honolulu, the one guide you need to the city. Well, it's time for this week's trivia challenge. Now, the question is about a Hawaiian specialty which might be a mystery for mainlanders. The question is, what is poke? Now, we're going to have that answer in a moment and be taking a trip to the North Shore for a shrimp truck lunch. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. The Splendid Table is brought to you by SuperTarget, a grocery store and Target all in one, where guests can have their cake and a plate to eat it on, too. Online at target.com/SuperTarget. And by Muir Glen Organic Soups, created to savor. We're on the island of Oahu in Hawaii this week, exploring one of the world's great overlooked food towns, Honolulu, which brings me to this week's trivia question. It's about a Hawaiian specialty the mainland knows little about. The question was, what is poke? Well, according to Hawaiian chef Elmer Guzman,
you say poke in Hawaii, 120% will say, okay, I know that, I love that. And poke is in everybody's lives. There's a football, there's poke. There's a party somewhere, there's poke.
Kind of makes me feel left out. Well, for we the uninitiated, poke, the word, means to cut up into small pieces. Poke, the dish, at its simplest, is bite-sized pieces of raw fish that are dressed with Hawaiian salt, seaweed, and ground kukui nut. And it is delicious. And no one does it better than Elmer. His unassuming place is called the Poke Stop. It's a takeout place in a strip mall. Now, Elmer takes poke places it has never been before. I mean, things like kimchi kona crab, Maui onion ahi, limu mussels, and from his days of working with Emeril Lagasse, blackened ahi sashimi. Elmer is a total treat, the classically trained chef who's been let loose on his own kind of food. Sort of like a kid in a candy store. Roadside plate lunch trucks are pure Hawaii. They're everywhere. For a few bucks, you get a plate of some kind of meat, two scoops of rice, and always a scoop of macaroni salad. But if you head up to Surfer's Paradise on Oahu's North Shore, you'll find a weird mutation of lunch truck food. Giovanni's Shrimp Truck with its shrimp scampi. Well, I ordered up and sat down for serious research.
We're here at a North Shore institution, Giovanni's Shrimp Truck. We're eating under a tree at a picnic table. The beach is probably about a quarter of a mile behind us. And I have here Troy, whose truck this is. And in front of me are two plates. There are three plates you can order. There's shrimp scampi, there's spicy shrimp, and the sign says no refund. It's super hot.
It's
and
fair
then,
warning.
Troy, what's the third one?
Third one is our lemon butter plate. That's just shrimp oiled steamed in a lemon butter sauce.
Is this, because I'm looking, there were two scoops of rice on the dish and a wedge of lemon.
Yep.
Is this sort of a takeoff on the Hawaiian plate lunch?
It is. If anybody's familiar with Hawaii, you know you always get a main portion of your meal plus it's usually a scoop of rice and then some mac salad.
But why a shrimp truck?
Well, honestly, it's all started with a family recipe for shrimp scampi. And actually, that's the original truck. Well, we're on radio, so you can't see it. But
yeah, but it's right behind us in a grove of palm trees.
We still have the original truck out there that used to go up and down North Shore and stop at the beaches until the cops came to kick them out. And then they finally settled on this area here, which we're at all the time now. This is our
And there's picnic tables and a covered awnings.
Picnic tables, covered seating.
I want to taste. And I'm going to start with the scampi.
Yep.
Got two scoops of rice, a wedge of lemon, this pile of shrimp with slivers of garlic.
Yeah. Now, there's no wrong way to eat it, but the right way is to...
Yes.
You take the lemon wedge and you squeeze it over the shrimp.
Okay.
Get all the lemon juicy on there. And then you take the shrimp by the tail, and you can see how the garlic and, you know, seasoning and whatnot...
It's actually piled in the curl of the shrimp.
Right, it actually sticks to the shell of the shrimp. So you got to put the whole shrimp in your mouth. Just pop the whole shrimp in your mouth and suck on the shell, get all that juice out of there.
Mm. That is... Boy, there's no doubt about the garlic, but the garlic's kind of mellow. And the lemon is super. All right, now I want to taste. This is the spicy shrimp, and it says no refund.
Yeah, you're on your own with this one. You do this at your own risk.
All right, so now we do the same thing with the lemon.
Same spicy sauce.
All right, and they're bright red. I should tell you, they're bright red. They're coated with red. Flecks of garlic.
You might not want to suck on that one the same way that you did the scampi. It depends how high your tolerance is.
I think I'll do a nibble in this case.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it'll make your lips swell.
Mm. I'm getting Tabasco, but I'm getting a lot more.
Yeah, it's a Tabasco base. Then we have our own secret hot pepper in there that
is in the middle of the shrimp meat, and it's not like it's a coating that you could just flop off. This has permeated every fiber of this puppy.
You really have to like the hot sauce to get the hot sauce. What we recommend is you get a scampi plate, and then we put a little cup of hot and spicy sauce on the side. You can dip it in if you like. But
I'm very glad to hear that. I'll return, and I'll do it slowly. But, Troy, thank you.
Well, thank you. This was a lot of fun for me, really.
I have had a lot of hot, but trust me, that was hot. But lucky for me, the legendary Matsumoto Shave Ice Shop was right up the road.
I'm going to try the Li Hing Moi.
Lychee would be great, too.
Yeah, this is interesting. It says ice cream or beans. And for condensed milk, you add 50 cents. This is stuff we've never... Guys, I'm going to get one of those. You guys go and do the shave ice, okay? All right, the rules are how to order shave ice. State the number of total shave ice. State how many large, how many small. State how many large and or smalls are with ice cream and or beans. Please provide the flavors to the pourer after your shave ice is made.
It's like Starbucks.
Okay.
All right. We would like four small.
Yep.
And one ice cream and shave ice small with beans.
Ice cream and beans?
Yes.
And the other three are just plain?
Yes.
And shave ice cream?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 6.5.
These are the old shave ice machines where the block of ice is in a clamp and there's sort of a blade that keeps going around and it comes out literally looking like snow.
Small is ice cream and beans.
Ice cream and beans. I think with that I'd like Li Hing Moi. The Li Hing Moi syrup is the brightest day glow coral I think I may have ever seen, and I don't know that it exists in nature, but it's covering this ice and underneath it are almost black
wonderfully sticky boiled beans that have been cooked in sugar syrup, and under that's vanilla ice cream, and I can't wait to get to it. Oh, just sensational. Okay, guys, surf's up to the beach.
Even if you've never been to Hawaii, you've probably heard of poi, that sticky purple mash that gets a lot of bad press from tourists. Well, there's a lot more to the story. Poi comes from the taro plant. Now, that plant is a backbone of Hawaiian tradition. And if you look closely in Hawaii, taro is everywhere, from chips to cheesecake. Well, over the hill from the surfers is a woman who's working to bring taro back to the islands. Her name is Kiona Mark. We met her in a residential neighborhood next to a church. She has a small garden patch of red dirt, and in the center is a big square of tall green plants. Kiona squealed up in her pickup truck in a cloud of dust. If ever there were a hippie Hawaiian Peter Pan, Kiona's it. She's in work boots and jeans, small, tight body, long gray hair tied back. She's the apostle of tradition and taro. Kiona, we came from the surfing capital of the islands.
Right.
Came over a rise, right. And all of a sudden we were in the middle of farmland.
Right.
It was as though somebody drew a line.
Right.
And has this always been agriculture?
The Wailo District was the bread capital of Oahu. And only in more recent years has it become one of the surf capitals of the world. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. But this is the breadbasket of this island.
Now, what are you doing? What is this project that you're doing?
This project is to grow taro and to teach taro cultivation for economic development for our local community.
Are you Native Hawaiian?
I am Native Hawaiian, and my family has been in this district for many centuries.
And has the family always grown taro?
The family has grown taro. A lot of families, this is our life. Taro is our bread.
Are people not planting taro anymore?
The problem in Hawaii is the land prices are so expensive, and taro is very labor intensive. So a lot of people don't want to plant taro for a living.
How is taro used in the islands?
All parts of the taro can be eaten. And we make it into a paste called poi.
Yeah, that we're familiar with when you come as a tourist and you go to a luau.
Right, so it's an island staple.
I understand that taro actually is tied in with god myths and creation myths. Is that true?
That's true in part, but the real deal is that Hawaiians believe taro is our ancestor, that we come from the taro plant. And the parts of the taro represent the family.
Huh.
So when you replant the taro, it's planting the generations over and over again. It's a continuum.
It looks so verdant and so lush.
It is. It's a beautiful plant. So I'm going to pull one for you. So, okay, this is the mother plant.
Oh, yes. There's four or five very strong stalks, but they're all coming off of the, what we would call, it looks like a potato almost, that you're now pulling at, right?
Yeah, right.
And then you can see sprigs coming off to the side as well.
Yeah, these are all the babies, and they will be replanted. And we kind
of... So the plant keeps giving of itself.
That's right.
So does the economic side of this really make sense to grow taro?
It's not so much the economic sense, it's the cultural sense, because it's a shame that we have to import taro from other countries to feed our people. This morning's newspaper, one of the headlines, one of the main issues that our legislature has to deal with is sustainability in all areas of life, housing, agriculture, mm-hmm. the tourist, you know, industry. So we're dealing with sustainability on a lot of different issues, you know, and sustainability means us, how we sustain ourselves,
yes.
what we eat, where we live, what we breathe, what we drink,
mm-hmm.
it's all of those.
And extra difficult or more challenging on islands. It's not a matter of there's more land.
Yeah, it's just limited in so many ways, you know, just limited. It's a struggle, but if you're willing to sacrifice to do what you want to do, it can be done, you know, just like this, it can be done.
Yes, yes, yes. Kiona, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Kiona Mark is president of the Hui Kalo Waialua Organization of Taro Farmers and the Native Hawaiians of Waialua. To talk serious eating. Where do the locals go and where are the deals? Well, John Heckethorn is the man to see. John is editor of Hawaii Magazine and he's been writing about the Hawaiian food scene for over a decade. John met me at a tiny Malaysian place, Betty Pang's Green Door. And after polishing off a lunch I'd kill for right now, I asked John a question. Now, if he had to move away from the islands and was back for a visit, where would he have to eat?
The first thing I do is I go to Zippy's, which is kind of the local fast food plate lunch, and I would get a chili and rice plate because I don't know what it is. The chili is not so Hawaii, except everybody here eats it. We eat it on rice. And after you've lived in the islands long enough, maybe even a couple years, you can no longer eat chili without rice. And because we do a whole lot of contrasty kind of things, you put a side of fried chicken next to it and some mac salad, which is a huge Hawaii tradition. So you gotta have mac salad. I would immediately go get a Korean plate lunch. What we know about Korean food here is the grilled specialties, and they're served traditionally here. I'm not sure tradition is the right word, commercially here.
Right.
With your choice of, say, a dozen different, what the Koreans call namul, vegetables and dressing, even spicy spinach, and then the traditional kimchis, cucumber and daikon and all those kimchis. The vegetables are very alive in addition to the meat. That's the kind of barbecue we eat here. When you say barbecue in Hawaii, you mean Korean barbecue.
So where else would you not want to miss?
Well, after you've had rice for dinner, you gotta have rice for breakfast. So I would go to Big City Diner and have eggs and fried rice with kimchi in it. So I'm getting my...
Is it traditional?
It's the owner's grandmother's recipe. No, it's not traditional. But everybody makes fried rice their own way, and I've had passionate arguments with people about whose fried rice is best. And there's just fried rice everywhere. It's kind of a breakfast food. I mean, we eat rice, and then fried rice is an entirely different dish. If you were eating lots of Chinese food, you wouldn't necessarily have fried rice.
But you would have it for breakfast.
Oh, of course. What else would you have for breakfast, right? It doesn't make any sense. You probably have some Portuguese sausage on that, but really, you can go to Side Street Inn and you can have clams with Portuguese sausage in the broth. They're kind of steamed white wine clams, but there's Portuguese sausage.
In there.
Right.
Yeah.
And a fair bit of fire in the broth as well.
Uh-huh.
And I would want that. Gee, now we're at night.
Right, okay.
I want to start drinking.
All right.
So I would go to an izakaya.
What's an izakaya?
An izakaya is a Japanese tradition, which I'm probably mispronouncing. An izakaya is a place where you go to drink sake and have snacks, the appropriate food to have with sake.
So this is like a Japanese version of the wine bar.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly, and you know, They usually put the sake cup in a masa, the little box that goes underneath it. And then they pour till the cup overflows into the box.
Yes.
So you feel abundant. And you can order really vivid flavors. My favorite thing is hamachi kama.
What is that?
Hamachi kama is the collar of the hamachi, the part up by the fin. And it's very difficult to eat because there are a lot of little bones, but the meat is fabulous. And one time, I remember some friends and I were drinking and having a great time, and we had one. And the waitress came by and she said, "Are you done with that?" And we said, "Yeah." And she said, "There's still meat on it." So we had to go back and make sure to get all the meat off the gill and everything because, you know, nobody's likely to scold you like a Japanese waitress. Really.
This is your mother speaking.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Now, the one thing to me that's most amazing about Honolulu is the depth and variety and availability of Asian food in its whole spectrum. To me, and all due respect to Hong Kong and San Francisco and New York, this is the best place to eat Asian food I've ever been. One, it's generally available. Two, it's not necessarily expensive. So kind of wherever you turn, there's at least pretty good Asian food. Chinese, Japanese, Thai, Laotian, Vietnamese, and even Malaysian. One of my favorite places is Spices, which is pan-Southeast Asian. The cook is Laotian, and he cooks. It's slightly different than Thai. Instead of basil, it's dill, and the eggplants tend to be multicolored, smaller, and slightly, many of them slightly more bitter.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're just amazing Asian food in Honolulu, and everybody eats it.
Okay, John, one more.
Well, the thing you have to eat here that is really hard to find on the mainland is Hawaiian food. So I would go stand in line at Ono, or I would go to the buffet at the Willows, or I'd go somewhere where I could eat Hawaiian food. You gotta have a lau lau.
Now, what is a lau lau?
A lau lau is pork and sometimes fish and sometimes an extra little bit of fat, which makes it, you have mm-hmm. to have a note from your cardiologist to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wrapped in luau leaves, which are the tops of the taro plant. So important to Hawaiian cuisine that they gave their name to the entire feast, the luau, in addition to the corm of the taro, which is, of course, used to make poi.
Right.
The leaves, you eat the leaves as well. There's something about that wonderful taste of pork cooked in luau leaves. It's a little glimpse of the past in Hawaii to eat those kind of things.
And the poi being the foundation.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, John, thank you.
You're welcome.
John Heckethorn is editor of Hawaii Magazine and an authority on the Hawaiian food scene. Well, that's the show for this week. Thanks for joining us. And until next week, let me leave you with this thought from Paul Thoreau. He said, Hawaii is not a state of mind, but a state of grace. The Splendid Table is produced by American Public Media and brought to you by SuperTarget. Everything you heard here today and so much more can be found on our website, splendidtable.org. The Splendid Table is supported by the Muir Glen Organic Soup Collection. Gourmet recipe soups made from premium garden fresh ingredients. You can learn more at muirglen.com. Muir Glen Organic Soups, created to savor. Additional support for the local tapings in Honolulu was provided by the Hawaii Visitors and Convention Bureau, providing a source for travel information about the scenic islands of Aloha. You can visit them online at gohawaii.com. The producers sincerely want to thank the Oahu Visitors Bureau, the Outrigger Waikiki on the Beach, Haleaina Ohana, Haley Matson Mathis, the Halekulani Hotel, Alan Wong, Chef George Mavro, Joan Namkoon, John Heckethorn, and of course the fine folk at Hawaii Public Radio. Have a great week. Join us next time, and thanks for tuning in. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper.
American Public Media.